Welcome to Torah Temecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Chana Meira, and today we'll be studying Parshat Vayetze. Parshat Vayetze contains 148 pesukim, and it covers four prakim. It is written very unique in that it's one long parsha. Generally speaking, when pesukim are written on a Torah scroll, there are different breaks called Petuchot and Stumot, different types of paragraph formatting that tells you that there's a new topic being discussed. But Parashat Vayetze is written as one long, huge paragraph, which tells us that this is one uninterrupted story, and it actually forms an excellent chiastic structure. Chiastic structure is an ABC-CBA format. So, A, the beginning of the parsha is Yaakov's departure, where he has the vision of the angels going up and down the ladder and calls the place Beit El. B, Yaakov escapes to Lavan and he sees Rachel at the well. C, Yaakov works in order to marry his wives. D, the center of the structure, the main part of the story, is the narrative of the birth of the children. Then we go backwards. C, Yaakov now works for wages. B is Yaakov escaping from Lavan. And finally, A, back to where we started, Yaakov returns to the land of Israel, and again he encounters angels in Machanai. So we see from this that the main focus of this week's parsha is Yaakov building his family. And it's also an interesting division point in the parashiyot. The first six parashiyot of Bereshit is Hashem sifting through each generation, selecting and rejecting different individuals until he finds a couple and a couple and their children. At the end of Toldot, Yaakov is the one who's chosen. But now as we transition into Vayetze, the following six parashiyot until the end of the Sefer, we stay with Yaakov's family. There's no more rejection. All the 12 Shvatim are going to form the family that will eventually grow into the nation of Klal Yisrael. So in this week's parasha, I want to specifically focus on our Imahot, Rachel and Leah, what they teach us, and how they together built the nation we are today. First we meet Rachel, but then when we meet the two of them together, we're told, Ulelavan shtei banot, shem hagdola Leah, v'shem haktana Rachel, which is a unique way of describing. Lavan had two daughters. The greater one was Leah, and the smaller one was Rachel. So Midrash Rabba tells us, what does this mean? The Banot are called Banot because they built the Jewish nation, and their two gifts, Leah is called Gedola because her gifts are eternal. She has the gift of kingship and kahuna, which lasted forever. Rachel is called the Ketana, the smaller one, because her gifts were temporary. Her descendants were kings for a short period. Yosef was a king for a short period. Shaul was a king for a short period, and the Mishkan in Shiloh only lasted 369 years. Lavan has two daughters. They're equal in greatness and equal in beauty, but they had one slight difference. The Pasuk tells us that Leah's eyes were tender, but Rachel was very beautiful. Rashi explains that the reason Leah's eyes were tender was she understood that Yitzhak had two sons, her parents had two daughters, and the older was supposed to marry the older and the younger the younger. She knew that Esav, the older brother, was a very wicked man, and she davened and cried and begged Hashem that she would be spared the fate of marrying such a terrible person, and this is why her eyes were rakot from so much crying. Leah teaches us an incredible lesson on tefillah. First of all, we'll examine throughout the course of the parasha how Leah's power of tefillah grows, but Leah doesn't daven for something. You don't dictate to Hashem how you need to be saved. You just say, Hashem, please help me. She davened, Hashem, please spare me the fate of marrying this terrible wicked man. And Hashem designed for her the most beautiful life. She marries Yaakov. She gives birth to six of the Shvatim. She becomes an intrinsic part of Klal Yisrael, and it was nothing that she asked for. All she asked was to be saved. Yaakov, however, asks to marry Rachel. And why does he ask to marry Rachel specifically? Because when he first sees Rachel, she's coming out with a sheep. And we know that in last week's parasha, Yaakov is described as Ish Ohalim, and Rashbam and Ibn Ezra describe that to mean a shepherd. So he's thinking, I'm a shepherd, she's a shepherd, this is a sign that we are meant for each other. What he doesn't realize is once he bought the Bechor and he took the brachas, he's also going to take on this aspect of Ish Sadeh, which we're going to see play in effect later on with the story of the Dudaim, which comes in the fourth Aliyah. Lavan agrees for Yaakov to marry Rachel on condition that he works for him for 7 years. And at the end of the 7 years, he doesn't want to get rid of his free slave labor, so he orchestrates a trick where he's going to substitute Leah for Rachel. Now, obviously, Yaakov knew that Laban was a trickster, and he'd planned ahead for that, and he gave Rachel special secret signs that should they be switched, he would ask the signs, and then he would know who's who. What he didn't count on was Laban inviting the entire town and doing the marriage ceremony in public. And while Rachel didn't really want to get tricked, she also wasn't prepared to let her sister be humiliated in public, and she gave over the signs. The next morning, when Yaakov discovers the trick and confronts Laban, Laban's very calm about it. He says, oh, in our town, we don't give the younger before the older, like a little dig at Yaakov, because he was the younger who took the portion of the older. He said, work for me another 7 years, but I'm a nice guy. You can have Rachel in advance. So after a week, he marries Rachel as well. And this is really a terrible thing, because in Hebrew, the word for co-wives is tsarot, which also means suffering. So to make two sisters who love each other now compete for their husband's love is really an awful thing to do. And we see the situation play out. The pasuk says, V'yahav gam et Rachel mileya. So what does this mean, gam or so? It means that Yaakov also loved Rachel. Even though Rachel betrayed him by giving the signs, he still loved her, and he loved her more than Leah. Wow, how does this feel for Leah? So in the next pasuk it says, Vayar Hashem kisnua Leah. Hashem saw that Leah was hated. Vayiftach et Rachma, he opened her womb. V'Rachel akara, but Rachel remained barren. What does this mean? Like, how could the great Yaakov possibly hate anybody? So there are different explanations. According to Ramban, he understands, as it's written, that Yaakov was very angry with Leah because she was complicit in this deception. However, Hashem saw that Leah did it l'shem shamayim, and that's why he made sure she fell pregnant straight away, because he knew that Tzadik Yaakov would never divorce the mother of his children. Radak understands it that Yaakov loved both his wives, but when you love two wives and you love one more than the other, the one whose love is not as much as the other feels hated in comparison. And the Or HaChaim wants to understand it that no one knew that Yaakov loved Rachel more than Leah, not even Yaakov himself. It was so minuscule, only Hashem knew. Rav Eliyahu Kitov explains that the reason Leah had to give birth straight away is all our imahot essentially were barren for very many reasons, but Hashem wanted them to be barren so that when they would give birth it would be miraculous, and that the mothers would develop themselves spiritually so that by the time their children were born they were on a high enough level to not just be a physical mother but to also be the spiritual mother of the future descendants coming from these children. However, when Hashem saw that Leah was not as loved, he immediately miraculously gave her children. Now, until now, we haven't heard one word from Leah. We have no idea what she's thinking, as she's this passive piece in her father's grand scheme. The only insight we have into Leah's inner world is as she gives her children names. And it's interesting that when she names her children, she names them with the name Hashem, God of mercy, not judgment. She feels like Hashem has answered her. So the first name is Reuven. Hashem has seen my suffering because people have mocked me. The second name is Shimon because Hashem has heard that I'm unloved. Already by the third name, though, we see a bit of optimism. Levi from the word laveh. Now my husband will accompany me. When I have two children, I could manage by myself. But three children, Yaakov has to start helping me, becomes more involved, gets to know me better. And then finally, the fourth child she calls Yehuda from Lehodot to thank. She knew that there would be 12 tribes. She knew prophetically that there would be four mothers. And she realizes she's been given more than her share. So she thanks Hashem. But she's also acknowledging the change in her status. Because as Yaakov gets to know Leah better, as he becomes more involved in their children, their relationship improves. And this gives us insight into the Jewish perspective of marriage. Rachel is the romantic, the elusive dream. Her tragic early death leaves the relationship suspended. It's the dream that never gets fulfilled. Leah starts off more mundane, but the love grows by the shared existence and the shared responsibilities and the shared destiny. Rachel becomes aware of the shift of dynamic, that even though she's the primary wife, Leah is slowly getting closer to Yaakov through the children, and Rachel becomes jealous and she confronts Yaakov and she says, Havali banim im ein metanach. Give me children, otherwise I'm as good as dead. And Yaakov responds very harshly. Vayicharef Yaakov. Yaakov became angry by Rachel with Rachel. Vayomer, and he said, Atachat Elokim Anochi, and I'm the place of God, Asher menamimcha pri beten, who's prevented you from having a child. Whoa, that is harsh. According to the Lekach Tov, what's going on here is Yaakov says, am I in place of God? He withheld children from you, not from me. And he unpacks a conversation. Rachel is challenging Yaakov, if you really love me, you'd put on sackcloth and ashes and you'd fast and you'd mourn. Why don't you pray like Yitzchak prayed for your mother? So Yaakov says, it's different. Yitzchak had no children. I have children, just not with you. So then Rachel said, well, what about Avraham? Avraham davened for Sarah. So Yaakov challenged, well, would you do what Sarah did? Sarah brought a rival into her home. Would you do that? So she said, fine, I will do that. I will do that, and through that I will be built. And she freed her maidservant Bilhah and gave her to Yaakov, hoping that Bilhah would be the surrogate mother. And Bilhah has two children. When Rachel names the children, she uses the word Elohim. Rachel feels judged by Hashem. Leah feels mercy from Hashem. The Akedat Yitzchak has a different interpretation of Yaakov's answer. He said Yaakov was saying like this. A Jewish woman has two roles. Her initial and her main role is actually Isha, which is the counterpart of man. It reflects her intellectual and spiritual purpose that just like a man, she is able to grow and serve Hashem and become an Eshet Chayil, serving God as she is. A secondary role is Chava, mother, nurturer, giving birth to children, but that's a secondary role. So a woman who for whatever reason can't have children, it's not like Rachel said, I'm as good as dead. God forbid. There is no reason why a woman can't develop a rich life full of good deeds, even without children. And this is what Yeshaya, the Navi Yeshaya, he tells us that the children or the products of a person are essentially his good deeds. This is a very important insight because in our world, which is very family orientated and centers so much around children, we have to remember that Chava is a secondary role. Everyone has a role to play between them and Hashem, and that role is the most important role of all, how we stand alone as an individual. Everything else is icing on the cake. Now, when Leah saw that she personally had stopped giving children, and she saw what Rachel had done with Bilhah, she was inspired and she gave her own maidservant, Zilpah, to Yaakov, and Yaakov has two children with Zilpah. So now we're up to eight tribes. In the fourth Aliyah, we finally see a dynamic shift between the two sisters. The Pasuk begins by painting a very poignant picture of a little boy bringing his mother flowers and his childless aunt observing the scene with envy. Let's look inside. Vayelech Reuven b'mei Katzir Chitim. Reuven went out during the time of the wheat harvest. V'imtza Dudaim. He found these plants that were Dudaim that had some fertility property in them, Basadeh. Vayavol Tamar Leah Imo. And he brought them to Leah, his mother. V'tomer Rachel. And Rachel said, El Leah to Leah, Tanina li mi Dudae Banach. Please give me your son's flowers. So on the one hand, you could say that she wants the Dudaim because of their fertility properties, but there's also the word Bani and Aim keeps being highlighted. She is so envious of a little boy bringing his mother present, and she wants that little piece of having a little boy. That's what she's asking Leah for. But Leah answers her quite angrily. Vatomrila, Leah says, Hama'at kachtech et ishi, it's bad enough you took my husband. V'lakachta gamet duda'e b'ni, you'll take my son's gift to me. That's very harsh considering how much Rachel gave up for Leah. She gave the simanim, she gave up the right to her husband. How can Leah say that to her? How do you think Rachel responds? Vatomer Rachel, Rachel said, Lachen yishkav imcha halayla, tachas duda'e banach. I'll make you an exchange. You give me the duda'im, it's supposed to be manat with Yaakov, I will give that to you. The Sforno interprets this, that Leah is saying to Rachel, you know, it was very nice that you gave me the simanim, but no one told you to follow up and marry Yaakov. You didn't have to join us, because now I'm always the third wheel the whole time. I'm the one who's always the nachschlepper. Do you see my pain? And Rachel, instead of being defensive, chose to put herself in Leah's shoes and try experience what it's like to always be the add-on in a situation where Rachel and Yaakov clearly have a close relationship. So she graciously acknowledges her sister's distress and she agrees to give her sister the right to be with Yaakov. This compassion had long-lasting effects. The immediate effect was that Leah has two more children, Yisachar and Zevulun. But the Midrash tells us there's a more long-term effect. Rav Shmuel ben Nachman says that Leah lost the Dudaim, but she gained two more tribes and the right of being buried next to Yaakov in Ma'aretz HaMachpelah. Rachel may have gained the Dudaim, but she lost the right to have those two tribes, and she lost the right to be buried next to Yaakov. Which means we see a role reversal here. There's a shift. Rachel is prepared to give up her role as the favorite wife, as long as she can be the mother. And Leah is prepared to relinquish her role as the main mother if she can just be the wife. And what happens long term? Leah is buried in Ma'aret HaMachpelah, signifying she's the main wife. And Rachel is buried on the way in Beit Lechem, that when the Jewish people got into exile, where do they daven? Kever Rachel. Throughout the exile, where have the Jews always daven? Kever Rachel. We'll go more into this when we get to Parshat Vayechi. There's a very famous Rashi there that we're going to do. But in this moment, there is a shift on the role of the two women. And it's emphasized again with the words Sadeh, because Leah goes out with the Dudaim that her son brought from the Sadeh. The pasuk says, Vayavo Yaakov min ha-Sadeh. In last week's parasha, it said, Vayavo Esav min ha-Sadeh. And what happened when Esav came back from the Sadeh? Yaakov bought the birthright. But more than the birthright, he bought the role of being a Bechor, which means becoming an Ish Sadeh, not just an Ish Olim. Who is the wife of a person who's the Ish Sadeh? That's going to be Leah. And that's why she says, Ki Sechar Secharticha, I have hired you, meaning you're not the only one who changed your fate with a financial transaction. The long-term repercussion is now you have me, and tonight I have you secured with a financial negotiation. And Yaakov finally accepts Leah as a full-fledged wife, realizing that she is meant for him just as much as Rachel is meant for him. The last glimpse we have of Leah is she finds out she's pregnant, and she realizes that if she has one more son, then Rachel will only have one son, and even the maidservants will have more children than her. So she davens to Hashem, and Hashem changes the gender of the child to a female. And that's why Leah calls her child Dina, because Hashem judged me and changed my child to a girl. So we see the incredible development of Leah's tefillah. She goes from davening just to be saved, to improving her relationship with her husband, to even changing the gender of her child for the sake of her sister. What happens to Rachel? Finally, Hashem remembers Rachel, and she gives birth to a son. However, Rachel, forever the seven negotiator, calls her child Yosef. Lamar saying, Yosef Hashem li ben acher. Thank you, Hashem, for this child. Please can I have another one? Once Yosef is born, Yaakov feels ready to face his brother Esav. He's ready to go back to Canaan. And first he tries to negotiate his wages with Lavan. And Lavan, being the crook that he was, changes the terms of negotiation 10 times. However, instead of cheating Yaakov, Yaakov comes out fabulously rich. Lavan and his sons are very jealous. Yaakov becomes aware of this jealousy, so he invites his wife Rachel and Leah to come talk privately with him in the fields. Again, we see how Yaakov has now adopted the fields. And we also see the contrast. Rivka and Yitzchak each act alone. Yaakov consults with his wives, and they decide to go back together to the land of Israel. But here we see one more action by Rachel. She steals her father's truffin. Part of it is because she wants to prevent her father from worshipping idols, but part of it is the truffin had some type of magic property that they could tell the future, and Lavan used them for divination. Rachel didn't want Lavan to realize where they were, so she took matters in her own hands, stole the truffim, and didn't tell anyone. Yaakov was unaware of this, so when Lavan catches up with him and accuses Yaakov of stealing his truffim, Yaakov says whoever took them should die, and he unwittingly pronounces a curse on his beloved Rachel. So what do we see from Leah and Rachel as we finish up the parasha? Leah teaches us the power of tefillah, how she develops her power of tefillah, how she becomes developed through her power of tefillah, to the point where she actually has the most children of all the imahot. But that's not what she wanted. She wanted to be the main wife. And it was only when she paired her tefillah with action, when she took matters in her own hand, that she finally got everything that she wanted. Rachel, in contrast, is very action-orientated, and that's why she's katana, because everything she does is a short-term act, because she has to learn how to daven. But we're going to see by the end of the Sefer how Rachel develops her own power of tefillah, so that to this day Rachel becomes our main advocate who davens for us up on high. But she's not there yet. At this stage of the parasha, she's not yet there. And perhaps the main lesson for us to learn is the amazing power of empathy that Rachel displays for Leah. That even when Leah seems so ungracious to not give her the duda'im after everything that Rachel's done for her, she can put herself in the other person's shoes, and that is when the relationship switches between the two sisters, ultimately leaving both of them what they wanted all along. So this coming week, we want to learn from Rachel and Leah the power of tefillah, the power of tefillah paired with action, and most important of all, the power of empathy. Have a wonderful week.